This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome, family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I'm Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week, we will chat with those in and around our community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. Today's guest is one of them. This person was born in Melbourne, and while you'll soon know them as a television actor on Australian screens, you may already know them as a prolific member of the non-binary trans community. Assigned female at birth, this young actor transitioned to male and has been an active member speaking out about issues in the trans community. So while the Prime Minister seems to struggle discussing necessary programs in schools when it comes to LGBTI young people, today's guest has a positive and easily understood grasp on what is a simple way to address equality in our country. So while Australia does that and continues to put a magnifying glass over transgender issues, the ABC have launched a new show, Back in Very Small Business, which features a new Aussie transgender character who I'm pretty sure we're going to fall in love with. I'd like to welcome you, and I'd like to welcome Roman Hadley-Lund to Word for Word.
And if we're going to use anything, I prefer he, him pronouns over she, her pronouns, of course. I was like considering myself, like, I think I'm non-binary or like genderqueer. Interestingly enough, I never even considered the fact that there were trans men out there in Australia. I'm one of the first people to play a trans person on TV. The sexuality question has always, like, I've been questioning that since I was like 13 years old. I spent a lot of time just chatting with all the other actors, you know, chatting with Kim Gingell and Mark Downey a lot because they played my parents in the show. I think it's not one thing that makes a good actor, because every actor does something different that works for them. Not understanding things is one of the biggest generators of fear. That's the thing I really want to stress with queer people as a whole, is that we're all different. Thank you for having me.
Are you excited to be a part of this series, Back in Very Small Business?
I am honestly, like, I was excited when I got the part, and I've been so keen for it the entire lead up to it actually airing. Like, I've been telling people about it since I started on it, and I've been telling people about it at all the jobs that I go to, and basically everyone I meet gets to, like, you know that I'm going to be on TV, and it's going to be this really great Australian TV, and they cast a trans person to play a trans character, and, you know, let me tell you about this really cool thing, but I won't give anything away because it's really funny and you're really going to like it.
Have you also been practicing, like, your autograph?
I have to sign documents at work every day, so I get lots of practice.
You know what's a tip for you is that the first few times I had to sign an autograph, I would sign with my signature that I'd use at the bank, which turns out is
a bad thing to do.
They can probably fraudulently steal all of your money that you've made from working on your brand new TV show.
That's not great. Thank you for the heads up.
That's what I'm here for. The series was originally on television in 2008. Had you been aware of that TV show before?
No, I actually hadn't watched it because 2008, I was like, what, 18 years old? Not even. I was like 17. So I didn't really watch a lot of ABC when I was younger, other than like watching after school programs.
And can you confirm this? Really, in Australia, this is the first transgender character to be played by a transgender person?
There was someone many, many moons ago. She played a trans woman on TV. But, like, you know, as a general rule of thumb, in Australia, I'm one of the first people to play a trans person on TV as who is actually trans as well.
Well, you know what? We're going to get into more about this and about your character, Leslie Leonard. But right now, we're going to get into talking about your upbringing. But before we do that, just really quickly, what pronouns do you like to use?
And if we're going to use anything, I prefer he, him pronouns over she, her pronouns, of course. But I've got a couple of friends who knew me when before I started transitioning fully. I was like considering myself, like, I think I'm non-binary or like genderqueer. So I had a lot of friends who would use they, them pronouns, and they just sort of stuck.
I always like to go and get this sorted out right at the start.
Yeah.
And you have to correct me through this if I get any of it wrong.
It's all right. I don't have any pencils. That's why I throw pencils at you every time.
Throw whatever you like. Now, you were born in Australia.
Yeah. Victorian, born and raised.
What would you say was your first memory of growing up here in Australia?
I actually grew up in Mount Martha. So one of my biggest memories is actually with my morfar or my grandfather. So being with my morfar and walking through the Mount Martha Reserve at the top of Hearn Road when it was twilight and all the possums were coming out, and we had a torch and we were looking for what we referred to as Nellebamsebjørn, which my family is Danish, basically means soft and cuddly bear.
Yeah. So your background then, is that both sides of your parents, are they Danish?
No, my mum's side of the family is Danish and my dad's side of the family is English. Yep.
And when did they move here to Australia?
I think mum was under the age of 10 when she moved. They came over on one of those big like cruise barges. And dad was in his 20s, I think, or early, very early 20s when he moved over.
What's the backstory then to your given name? So your birth name?
Not something I like to talk about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for me, very much my birth name, and I know for a lot of trans people in particular, it's one of those topics that can be a little bit insensitive.
Okay. How did you go about getting your name that you have now?
All right. So this is going to make me sound like a huge nerd. So I actually LARP. So I do live action role play. So for people who don't know what LARP is, it's basically like Dungeons and Dragons, but you dress up as the characters and spend 4 hours running around like a scout hall or something in character.
But that's cool.
It's really fun, actually. And I really, really enjoy it. It's actually how I met my boyfriend as well.
Interesting.
So I made this character that I was playing and I actually gave them the name Roman. And was basically hoping to road test the name, but everyone gave them the nickname Selkie. And so they ended up just calling him Selkie the entire game. And I was like, I was trying to road test a name here.
Yeah. And how old were you when that happened?
I was 22, 23, something like that, when I started road testing the name. And then actually like started using the name more frequently when I was about 25 or something like that.
That's when you made it permanent.
I made it permanent when I about 26.
And what would you say you were like as a child growing up?
Pretty sure my mum would describe me as a bit of a brat or a massive handful.
Right.
I was an only child, so I remember being very good at entertaining myself. Like, mum could never send me to my room to think about what I'd done because all my toys were in my room and I would just spend hours like, I'm happy playing by myself.
And then with your relationship with your parents, I mean, your parents did get divorced, didn't they?
Yeah, so my parents got divorced when I was, I think, about 18 months old. So I mostly grew up with my mum and saw my dad, like, every second weekend.
And what would you say your relationship was like with your mum growing up?
Mum and I, especially once I got a little bit older, we were, like, I always considered us best friends. And, like, I could tell her anything and everything. And we were really, really close like that. There was a very much an openness of like, you know, I'm your boss, but I'm still your friend. And, you know, you can talk to me if you have questions. Or she fought in my court a lot. Like, I got bullied in primary school really quite badly. And she was constantly in my court, like fighting the teachers, fighting the principal, being like, why aren't you doing anything? Yeah. And then eventually was just like, nah, I'm going to move you schools. We're going to move schools.
Move to something different. What about your dad? What was your relationship like with him?
It was pretty decent. Like, you know, we were, again, we were pretty good friends, and when we did see each other, I did have, like, some apprehensions as I got older. We butted heads a lot. We were both Sagittarius, and we're just at loggerheads, very opinionated people with very opposing opinions.
Some Sagittarians enjoy a bit of a debate. Does that mean that there was an enjoyment in the debate between you and your dad, or...?
I think I enjoy a good debate when I'm not fighting someone who has has that much more power over me, because sure, you know, he's your dad, he's your boss, and it's not fun to debate someone when you know that if they don't like the answer that you're wrong.
Yeah. What age did you start to think about your gender and your sexuality and how you wanted to present yourself?
The sexuality question has always, like, I've been questioning that since I was like 13 years old. I started out like I had a crush on a female friend and thought I was a lesbian, and then I was like, maybe I'm bisexual, and then just like slowly realizing like I don't like sex at all, I'm not really interested in it. And then I think I was about 21, 22 when I finally found the word asexual, and I was like, this is it, this is me, this one right here, this is me. And I was just so pleased to be able to find that word and not have to think that there was something wrong with me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And then about your gender identity, like, when did you start sort of changing the way you presented yourself?
I've always sort of dressed a little bit more. I dressed more for comfort than for looks. But I also had a really big interest in makeup as well. And I started, when I was about 16, I started doing a lot of cosplay. And that's where I sort of started getting into makeup as well. But when I was cosplaying, I almost exclusively cosplayed as male characters. I was like, I didn't like any of the female characters really, because I found all their outfits were too revealing, or the character themselves was just not appealing to me. So there was a lot of that. And then when I was about 20, 21 is when I started going, oh, I like this whole genderqueer thing, presenting strictly masculine, but still occasionally having feminine gender expressions. Then, yes, slowly just getting more into the genderqueer thing, but starting to phase out the more traditionally feminine fashions, and then eventually being like, no, I really much prefer it when I'm being recognized by the general public as masculine.
What about when you were little? Were you more drawn to wearing more masculine things?
Again, I was, from what I can remember, like what mum's told me, I was always sort of a little bit more drawn to, again, comfort clothes, like clothes right. that were comfortable. So, like, you know, my mum and my dad would buy me, like, pretty dresses and stuff like that, and mum would send me over to dad's place, and I'd be like, overalls.
It's an interesting place to be in, where I think we should all be allowed to just take our time to find and discover what it is that we want to discover in our own time.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing with the scare of, like, so many trans people being in the community and stuff, you know, like, or like, you know, trans kids in schools and such, is that all you need to do is just let kids do their thing. Let them pick their clothes, let them do stupid things, let them experiment with gender, and just they will figure it out for themselves. It's not a massive, we shouldn't be pushing kids to find what they want to do, who they are, and where they want to go, and who they want to be when they're like 18 years old.
How did your parents cope as you were growing up? Like, with your own discovery and talking about your discovery through sexuality and gender identity, how were they coping through this period?
At first, it was not great, because I came out as asexual first, and mum was sort of like, oh, okay, I guess. Like, I'm sure you'll find someone eventually.
Did she not understand?
She understood it, but she sort of, I feel like maybe it was just a little bit.
Did she think it was a phase?
I'm not sure. I haven't really spoken to her much about the asexuality side of things. And my dad, he still tries to understand it, but he still very much doesn't understand how I can have a relationship while being asexual. And he questions it a lot. And the conversation does get a little bit repetitive sometimes. And with the trans side of things, that was a little bit harder, especially on my mum, because I'd always been her little girl. And she had all these big plans for me as a female, and I was like, but I'm not.
And is there a grieving process that happens for a mum?
I think she really did go through a grieving process. There was, because I told her when I was about 25, and then I moved out of home when I was about 20, I was like 25, 26 when I moved out of home. And for almost a year, I did actually cut contact with mum as much as I possibly could. Because I'd started my hormones, I had changed my name, and I was just like, I just need 100% support. And I had that from the people I was living with and from my friends and stuff like that. So I was like, I'm going to dial back the contact I have with mum, you know, Christmas, birthdays, the occasional extra phone call if we need anything from each other and stuff like that, just because I needed that support, especially during that initial transition. We started to pick up conversation again after about a year, and then I had a very bad breakup that was pretty gut-wrenching for me. And so the first thing I did, I remember, like, prior to this, like, talking to my psych and being like, I really miss my mum. All I want to do is talk to my mum about these things that I'm going through, and I can't. And that was a really big thing for me, because, as I said, we'd been best friends, and then suddenly I couldn't talk to her. And
that separation of you not talking to her,
yeah.
I mean, is that was...
That was my sort of grieving process as well. It's like, I didn't feel like it wasn't so much that I didn't want to talk to her. I didn't feel like I could talk to her.
You're right.
Because, yeah, she was initially very much like, this is weird and I don't like it. And you're hurting me by doing this to me. Mm. Like, she's like saying, you transitioning is an attack on me, almost. With not exactly what she said, but like that's how it felt to me. It was like I felt like she thought I was doing this to spite her, And when I called her after the breakup, I was just like, you know, I've missed talking to you. And she was like, come over for dinner. We're going to chat. And she had gone from refusing to use my pronouns and getting angry every time I corrected her and not liking my new name choice to really actively trying. And she's excellent now. She's one of my biggest supporters now.
What piece of information or what happened to her that stopped her and changed her mind and helped her be able to deal with this better?
I honestly don't know. I haven't actually really spoken to her much about it. I think I was just so happy to have my mum back.
I guess she missed her person because regardless as to whether or not you were her little girl or her little boy or regardless, you both had this genuine relationship as you were growing up.
Yeah.
So obviously that would be so hard.
Yeah, and I think there was also, she did have the support of my stepdad, who is a lovely human being, and he tried really hard to support me while not putting a rift between him and mum, but at the same time still trying to make sure that I was happy. So I think I have a sneaky suspicion he had a bit of a hand in it of helping her come to terms with everything. And yeah, he's always been a really good supporter of me as well.
How did you come across information, or how are you accessing information that you needed to be comfortable within your own skin? Because, I mean, being isolated from your parents and trying to work these sorts of things out must have been very difficult.
Yeah. I do have a lot of LGBTQIA friends. A lot of them are genderqueer or trans, and that was very helpful. But I actually found a lot of my initial terminology and support on Tumblr.
Wow.
Yeah, Tumblr was a really, really good, was where I found the term asexual and all about, like, the flag and stuff like that. And I was like, this is a thing. There are people like this, like me.
And so you were looking and seeking for information online to sort of...
I wasn't even really looking for it. It's just all the people that I followed on Tumblr were all queer in some way, shape or form. So they were all blogging about it, and I kept coming across my dashboard, and I was like, oh, this is a thing. And I knew about trans people. I knew they were like a thing that existed, but it was not something that was really spoken about in my house a stack. Like general, like LGBT things weren't really spoken about. But I do remember... like, I remember I'd seen a trans woman on television, and it was a really horrible representation. It was like, this is a man in a dress kind of thing. And I felt like I felt bad for her, and it felt like a really negative representation. And then, interestingly enough, I never even considered the fact that there were trans men out there. I'd never considered that. I was like, I know trans women are a thing, but trans men was just completely skipped over my head.
Mm.
For a lot of it, that what I was getting from like Tumblr and finding on Tumblr, it was just social stuff. Like, it was social transitioning.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't really looking at a lot of the medical side of it. I was looking at makeup that I could wear that would, like, square off my face a little bit. And
and were you doing those sort of things?
Yeah, I would occasionally, if I was cosplaying or something like that, I would contour my face in a particular way. I started wearing crop tops to sort of flatten my bust, and wearing more like, you know, jeans, more baggy shirts so that I didn't have so much of a waist and stuff like that. And a lot of it was just very, for me, it started with a social unlearning of like, no, you don't have to just shop in the women's section because, you know, you've always shopped in the women's section. Go shop in the dude section. Buy what makes you happy, you know, buy what you feel comfortable in. And then starting to talk to my friends who were all super open and lovely and accepting, and I was like, yeah, no, I want to start using neutral pronouns. I want to use they, them pronouns. They were like, okay, cool. We'll try our best. And they did. They all tried really, really hard. And that helped me initially to start my social transition and feeling more comfortable in how I express my gender and not worrying so much about how I was presenting to people. And then I started doing I think I had a friend who started his medical transition just with the hormone replacement, and I was like, oh, I want to look into that as well, but I wasn't sure if I would. So I started seeing a psychologist and just talking to him general kind of things.
Did you initiate that process of going and see a psychologist?
Yeah, I went to go see a GP and got the mental health
referral
scheme thing going. And I specifically, after a lot of stress, actually got into Northside, which is a LGBTQIA friendly clinic in Fitzroy. So I got in to see them, and he was like, cool, I know these three psychologists from just from talking to you today. I think you would really do
appreciate them.
Yeah, I think you would appreciate this particular one. And yeah, I've been seeing him for 3 or 4 years now, and he's helped me so much. He's helped me with my referral for my top surgery now. So I'm slowly getting there.
But it's great. I mean, it's all about a quest to find you being comfortable in society.
Yeah.
And then the rest of Australia at the moment, I think, is just quickly trying to catch up. And some people are good about it, and some people obviously in the media are not so good about it.
Yeah.
But I guess from my point of view is just knowing more information.
Yeah.
We need more information out there.
I think the thing is that information is really accessible now because we have places like Headspace and we've got Minus 18. We've got the internet as a whole. Like, you can
Google. If you've got a question, maybe Google it.
Yeah.
And am I right by saying that you then, do you identify yourself as polyamorous then?
Yes, I'm also poly as well.
So, if for people out there that might not be aware of polyamorous relationships, can you explain that?
The other term for it is ethical non-monogamy. So, my boyfriend and I, we are in a relationship. And he is also in a relationship with another woman, and she's lovely. Her and I are good friends, and we get along like a house on fire. So he has two relationships. We both know about each other, and we both are fine with that. And I previously, while I was dating my current boyfriend, I had another partner as well, and he knew about him. And basically, it's the big thing for it is like open honesty and communication. We've taken to calling them galaxies. So there's a single star, and like you are the star of your polyamorous relationship, and then all the people around you are other planets, and then
They are existing in different galaxies.
Well, no, they're like, for me, like, say, if like, as a joke, like, I'm just going to use a weird kind of analogy. So I'm the sun, and then Keegan is, say, Earth.
Yep.
And his girlfriend Alex is the moon.
Wow.
Because
okay.
She circles him. But she doesn't circle me.
It's actually a really good way of being able to explain it.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people out there that I think go, oh, I don't get it. You know?
It's a lot. Like, I've had a coworker who I drew a diagram for, and she looked at it. She was like, no, that's too much for me. I understand it, but no, that's too much.
Well, I guess it's each to their own. As much as you want to participate in a relationship that functions like that.
Yeah.
It might. That's
no, it's definitely not for everyone.
It's not for everybody.
I think the biggest thing for me when I started being in a polyamorous relationship was learning to deal with my own jealousy.
Because how do you deal with your own jealousy in a polyamorous relationship? That's what I want to know.
This is the thing. People be like, oh, don't you get jealous? Like, yes, I do. I am a terribly jealous person. But the big thing with being in a polyamorous relationship is I need to sit down. If I'm feeling jealous, I need to sit Keegan down and be like, I'm feeling jealous right now. And I think I'm jealous because I feel like you're spending more time with your girlfriend than you are with me. And then he can go, okay, cool. Well, let's schedule on some more time that we can spend with each other.
To balance it out.
Yeah. Google Calendar is a polyamorous person's best friend.
So you're making it work.
Yeah, it's definitely working. We're doing something right.
And are you happy?
Yeah. Honestly, he's one of the, he's been my biggest support, and he's one of my best friends. Like,
is there love in a polyamorous relationship between you and then her?
Not really. Like we're not in a relationship, and but we're good friends.
Okay.
Like, we get along really well.
That's cute. Yeah. So like, but that's based on more of a friendship basis. It's less.
Yeah. Polyamory never struck me as weird or anything like that, because I remember, again, being like in primary school and like early high school and stuff like that, and just being like, you see all these love triangles in movies and TV, and you're like, why don't they just all date each other? What's the problem here, people? And that was always my thought. I'm like, but what if she dated both of them instead of them like killing each other over her?
But this is the thing, is like, I guess that's sort of the start of where we need to normalize things and just be like, you know, you can have different relationships. It doesn't necessarily mean that your whole life is going to be impacted or changed forever.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, we need to normalize exploring, like people exploring themselves. And no spoilers, but there's a really good storyline with Leslie about that I was really appreciative. And that was like, I read the script and I was like, I fucking love this so much.
Oh, we're going to talk about that a little bit, because that show has really fascinated me, and I'm obsessed. What were your early ambitions? I mean, obviously you've jumped around with different things. I mean, you obviously explored your work with makeup.
Yeah.
You've worked at Medibank. Mm-hmm. How did you come across acting?
Well, I always was interested in acting. Like, I did a lot of theatre work when I was in high school, and I was very involved in the theatre productions. The first production at high school that I was involved in, like the big all-school production, was actually Little Shop of Horrors. And cool. I really, really wanted to play Audrey or the plant. I wanted to play Audrey too. And I didn't actually get either of those parts, and I was kind of devastated, a bit heartbroken. But then I got into backstage work, which is actually, again, that started pushing me towards makeup. So I worked as a backstage ninja, just doing all like set dressings and building stuff. And then the second all-school play that I got involved in was The Wizard of Oz. And again, I wanted to play the Tin Man or the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Those were the two that I auditioned for, and I didn't get either of them again. And I was like, oh, fine. Okay. Pretty upset about it. So I was like, no, screw it. I'll do it backstage again. But ended up, we realized we needed a makeup artist at this point because we were doing the lion, the scarecrow, the monkeys, the witch, that we needed someone who was able to do all the makeup because the actors like didn't have time
to do their own,
especially if it was kind of finely detailed like the monkeys or the lion. So I actually ended up being a makeup artist, and I had a little team. I had like two other people who the three of us all did makeup on the show. It was really, really good fun, and I really enjoyed it. I still actually have, I was going through some old stuff the other day, and I actually found I still have all the face charts. So like, you know, this is, you know, use this makeup here, use this makeup here, and like little textures as well. Like we made a texture stamp out of a piece of Hessian bag so that the scarecrow actually had like a Hessian face and stuff.
So
like that.
Clever.
Yeah, it was just little stuff.
But like, I mean, this is the thing for you, is that you're obviously a creative person.
I am.
And you're good at being able to tap into that creative side.
I like making things and that and all that kind of stuff.
Do you think you'll do more acting?
I would love to. I'm actually in the process of getting all my headshots together and putting together a bit of a show reel with all the short clips and stuff like that, so that I can get start looking for an agent, because I actually don't have an agent yet.
What do you think makes a good actor?
I think just sort of diving into it. I spent a lot of time just chatting with all the other actors, you know, chatting with Kim Gingell and Mark Downey a lot, because they play my parents in the show. And spent a lot of time chatting with Liv Hewson and Molly Daniels and everyone. And it was learning different things from them, because they each have their own thing that they bring, not just to the show, but to the table when you're talking. And it was, I think it's not no one thing that makes a good actor, because every actor does something different that works for them. Mm. And whether it's like, yeah, for me, it's sort of like, I have the luck actually of LARPing actually really helps, because when I'm LARPing, I'm in character constantly. It teaches you how to like drop in and out of character really quickly. So like I can be in character doing, I had a particular experience during one of my LARPs where one of my friend's characters died and our characters were friends, and I cried, and like I actually, my character got upset. And then I started getting upset, and then I was like actually fully crying, and I was like, what is going on here? And then people were like, are you okay? Like out of character, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. Like still like tears rolling down my face. I was like, I'm fine. My character is not.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah.
It's a duality though, that I mean, you've obviously got a special gift to tap into.
Yeah. It's a weird thing that I've sort of developed, but I think that also comes from just being generally a creative person as well. I also like telling stories.
And having a natural flair for the dramatics.
One of my mum's nicknames for me was Greta Garbo, the ultimate drama queen.
Talking a little bit about the show, can you please explain to me, and I mean, obviously I know, but can you please explain the premise of the show?
See, everyone keeps asking me to like describe the premise, and I'm like, there's so much that happens. To boil it down a little bit, it is about a group of small businesses under one company run by someone who is both very genuine and very dodgy.
That's the good thing about this guy. It's like, when I first looked at it and I started getting into the characters, I was like, is this guy...
For real?
For real. Like, I'd never seen the original launch of the show in 2008. So this brand new season that's currently showing on ABC at the moment, I was like, he's kind of grating against me, but I'm liking him at the same time based on the fact that he...
You love to hate him.
...has an energy level and a dedication and a passion that makes you feel connected to him.
Yeah, he loves what he does, even if what he does is sometimes a little bit underhanded.
Well, the series, it's made by the same people that made the first series, which is Gristmill Productions. And it stars Wayne Hope in the main role. This is who we're talking about.
Yeah.
And he's familiar with playing this character previously.
Yeah.
And he is also in business in partnership with Kim Gyngell.
Yeah.
And it's then a banner of other businesses that fall underneath that.
That's correct, yeah.
And you are playing Kim Gyngell and Mark Downey's son.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me about you playing that role is there's a very lighthearted but very real approach to the way that they are talking to you, being a transgender character.
Yeah.
That I think was confronting at first, because one of the first gags, you know, with your character was about you having a beard.
Yeah.
Oh, that beard's coming along.
Yeah.
And then you could see him.
How uncomfortable he was.
But that's real life.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing I really appreciated about it, because actually, when I got the part, Robin Butler and Wayne Hope got me into the studios and we sat down and read through the entire script together. Because they wanted, it's like, we want you to go through the script, so read it and then come in later so that we can sit down and talk about the script as a whole and fix what is not true to life.
How much contribution were you adding to this to make sure that it was an accurate story being told?
There wasn't a stack that I actually added in the end because they had tried really hard. The big thing was, Leslie's not the joke. What the joke about Leslie is that Leslie's really bad at people. And the joke about Don is that Don doesn't understand Leslie. The fact that Leslie is transgender is just a thing. Leslie is a person who happens to be transgender, but Don is the one who's uncomfortable and that makes him the joke.
It always makes him look I mean, that's what I was laughing at. It always puts him in a situation where you're like, but I think that would be me in some ways. I'd be like, I can see that I want to be comfortable with this, but I'm obviously continuing to up, you know, and this is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other hand, like Leslie's, the joke about Leslie is just that he's a drama queen.
Did they talk to you about the original character in the 2008 series and about Leslie and what that character was back then?
They didn't really talk to me a bunch about it, but I did get lent the first series. So I actually went back and watched it just because I wanted to see what I was getting in, like, you know, what the show was about.
Yeah, the feeling.
I also did want to see what Leslie had been previously and how Leslie had been previously. Like, we don't want you to play Leslie again. We don't want you to be the same person because it's 10 years down the line and you're a different person now. So yeah, that was a big thing for me. I really enjoyed actually going, sitting down and watching it. And the relationship between Leslie and Ray has changed in those 10 years.
The father.
Yeah. Because the first series is, of course, not long after Ray finds out that Leslie's not actually his kid, whereas this is, you know, 10 years down the track and family relationships have changed, dynamics have changed, and Leslie's starting to transition. So there's a whole lot of different things that have changed there, and they're very different people now.
Are they the same character? Or are they just two different characters in polar universes?
They're definitely the same characters. Like, for me, I think the way it was written, they're definitely still the same characters. Like, they have a lot of those same mannerisms in the way that they speak and the things that they say, but it is a character who has grown and changed as a human being.
Was there a lot of pressure, do you think, for yourself to play a trans person accurately in a way that you didn't feel like the trans community were going to come and attack you for being dishonest or being the way that everyone feels represented?
I think that was one of the big things about coming in and reading the script with Robin and Wayne, was to sit down and make sure it was more accurate to life. A lot of it was just terminologies that were changed. Initially, Leslie was more focused on their hysterectomy rather than the double mastectomy. And I was like, look, while some people do go straight for the hysterectomy, I think it would be more true to life to start with a double mastectomy. And that, so we switched around what
that character wanted,
what the character wanted and what he was talking about a lot more. Our initial, like, medication references were, like, all about, like, pills and stuff like that. I was like, it's not generally pills. It's usually, like, injections or a topical ointment. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. We'll change that. And I think there was one line right at, like, in the very end, which I won't spoil, that got changed a little bit just to, because I was like, I wouldn't say it. Like, me personally, as a trans person, I wouldn't say stuff like that. And so they're like, cool. And we changed it.
Yeah. Did you go and meet the writers?
Yeah, so, like, we sat down. We originally started with the first lot of scripts. We sat down, we went through all the changes and the suggestions that I made, and then a couple of, I think, like, a week, less than a week later, we got the revised scripts, and they changed all the stuff that I'd said and made it, but kept some of the stuff and like made it their own, but still kept it true to life.
Look, I think for people out there, they're just going to see this show as being something quite different. I mean, the ABC are always great at being able to find different stories and tell things in a very true-to-life format. So for people who are listening to this right now, make sure you get onto iView and catch up on the episodes that have already played and, you know, what, get on board with the series. It's so nice to be able to see Australian stories being told where they're relatable.
I did get a lot of friends watching it and they're all the responses were like, it's so Melbourne suburbia, it's so Victorian suburbia, and I have like friends who are interstate watching it going like, I love this so much, Don is both horrible and excellent, and like yeah, they're all just feel the same way. They're like, he grates me, but I want to keep watching because I want to see how he succeeds and how he fails.
But that's exactly what it is. What was the audition process like? What did they do to get you to get this role?
So initially I came down to read out, they'd sent me one scene in particular, and it's actually the first scene that Leslie appears in. They'd sent me the introduction scene, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Read through all that, and we did a read through against the casting agent, and Robin was there, and that was great. They seemed to really like me, and I was very nervous. I was really, really nervous. I've never been to a proper, like, audition before. And then I got a call, I think a week or so later, and they were like, cool, we really liked you. We want you to come back again so we can see how you play against Wayne. We want to see how you go against the lead actor. So they said, you know, so I came back in, I got to meet Wayne, and we had this... We did a couple of scenes. We did, the initial intro scene, and then we did another scene that's later on in the series. And that was fantastic. It was so fun to meet Wayne. And
he's got a lot of energy.
He does. He's such an interesting person as well. Like, he's, you know, you see him as Don, and you're sort of just like, Don is a very strange man. Like, very strange man. But
one way to put it.
Wayne is just a genuinely excellent person. Like, he's really, really lovely. And he really wants things to go well, but he wants everyone to succeed. And Robin was the same. Like, you know, she was always making sure that everyone was on board and that everyone understood. She was a fantastic director, and she just was a lovely, lovely person to work with. And I felt they both were excellent people, just as in a general aspect, but also in supporting someone who'd never acted before.
And you'd never done any work. You'd never been paid as an actor before at all,
Or playing a major role. So it was a lot of firsts for me. And all the crew were fantastically helpful. And bless on all the like all the lighting and sound and camera guys, because I would constantly just pepper them with questions when I was out of a scene and they were setting up. I was like, why does it do that? What is that for? And just constantly, like, because I'm just generally curious by nature. I just want to know what's going on.
Yeah, and for sure.
They were so tolerant of me, just, like, constantly questioning, why does that thing blink? What is that for? Why does it why do you do that?
I think curiosity is what's missing in the world. I like people that are curious. I like to listen to people that are curious, you know. Yeah. So I think it's fine for you to be on set and be exploring that world.
Yeah.
What are some of the struggles that your character faces in the TV series?
I think one of the good story arcs for Leslie is the initial one of, like, learning to fit in without fitting yourself into something that you're not comfortable with. So just generally coming to terms with finding his place in the worldwide business group. And I understand that as a person, like, finding your place in a new workplace is so hard. And it takes weeks, it takes months to find where you fit in the dynamic that's already there.
Well, culturally, when you're getting a job, I think it's good for people to work out if they're the right fit, you know?
Exactly.
You know, it might be the job that you want, but culturally, you might not be the right fit for that employment.
Yeah, or for that particular, like, group.
What differences do you have that are different to Leslie?
I think we deal with things differently. Leslie's a lot more outspoken than I tend to be, especially on your first day. I tend to do this thing where I will sit back for the first couple of days and just assess the situation constantly. Like, I need to assess what kind of people I'm dealing with. That was something I think stems from being bullied, is also just like, I need to know who these people are before I can talk to them, because if I reveal anything to these people, they may use it against me. So yeah, that's a big difference to begin with, is that, like, the way we approach new situations is very different.
What is the difference between your fictional family versus your real family?
I feel like the fictitious family is a lot more dysfunctional. like, my family is fairly, like, I mean, all families are dysfunctional, but, you know, my family, I feel like they've managed to sort that shit out. I don't need to pit my parents against each other. I feel like Leslie does that a little bit, pits them against each other.
Did you immediately like Kim Gyngell and Mark Downey?
I adored Kim when I first met him. I was very nervous when I first met Kim because I was like, oh, you know, he's quite a, you know, a prominent Australian actor. Like, all right, here we go. And then he was just so chill and genuine and like really, really relaxed. Mark and I didn't get much chance to speak until we were on set more. We spoke a little bit at the like initial reading that we did, but we spoke more when we were on set, and we spent a lot of time like between scenes just sitting on one of the set couches or something and just chatting and
trying to foster a relationship.
Well, it was just so easy to foster relationships with them. They were just such lovely people. And Marg spent plenty of time just talking to me. She's like, you know, you're doing really well for your first acting gig and stuff like that, and related, you know, her first big acting role to me, and we're talking about how it was different. And, you know, she's like, you know, she was just like, everyone was so genuine.
Mm.
I was always so worried. I was like, oh, what if they, you know, what if they're like, you know, completely different from how you think they're going to be and stuff like that. But everyone was so relaxed and genuine and chill and really wanted everyone else to succeed and be happy and stuff like that. And all the like younger cast members all supported each other fantastically. We all got along really well. We all like more friends on Instagram and stuff like that. And
do you know if there's going to be a season two?
I hope so. I really hope so.
Do you think there's going to be a season two?
I'm not sure. I think there's definitely good potential for a season two, but I have no idea, to be honest.
You'll have to just wait and see.
I have to wait and see.
Who are your actors that you look up to? Is there anyone that you look up to that you think, oh, that's an inspiration?
I've always kind of looked up to the girl plays Luna Lovegood in Harry Potter, Ivana Lynch, because her sort of story of how she got the part is just kind of inspiring to me.
I don't know the story. How did she get the part?
She was in the hospital recovering from an eating disorder, quite a serious eating disorder. And she wrote to JK and was like, oh, you know, I think she filmed an audition or something like that. Like a little audition or something. And she asked for the part, like, was like, I really want to be in Harry Potter. And she got a response, was basically like, when you get better, if you can get better and you can overcome this, then you can we'll put you in Harry Potter. And she ended up getting the role of Luna, and it was just like, it was so inspiring and beautiful. And I love the way she plays the character as well. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was inspiring, in the fact that she not only pulled up the courage to just email someone and be like, I want a part, but also fought her own illness to get what she wanted, and she fought and she overcame. And I always find that really inspiring. And that was the big thing for me as well with getting this part, because I almost didn't apply for it. I didn't even send the email just to ask if I could have the audition. And yeah, all my friends were just like, just apply, the worst thing that can happen is they say no. Do it.
Imagine if you didn't email them.
I know. And I can't, I'm like, what would have happened if I hadn't emailed these people? I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, well, I think that things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously where you needed to be. Mm. So what are some of the issues moving forward?
Mm.
What do you think are some of the things that needs to change in the culture of Australia and the way that transgender people are treated?
I honestly think everyone just needs to chill out, to be honest. There does definitely needs to be more education. And what I think really needs to happen is like, what we need more extensive education. The reason people are often aggressive in their dislike of things is because they don't understand it.
So there needs to be more information out there.
Yeah, there needs to be more information out there. Not understanding things is one of the biggest generators of fear. If you don't understand something, you're scared of it because you don't know how it works, what it does, and stuff like that. Having that education from a young age of just being like, even in like primary school, like I don't remember doing a lot of, we did like the health, you know, like Herald and the Life Ed Van. We didn't do a lot about sexuality, but like even just being able to say to people, there are boys and there are girls and there's everyone in between. And, you know, some people like boys, some people like girls, and it doesn't matter. And some people like everyone, some people like no one, and there's nothing wrong with that. Even someone just saying to me when I was 14, it's okay to not like sex, and it's okay to not be interested in sex, would have been so helpful to me, rather than spending most of my teenage years going like, there's something wrong with me that I don't want to have sex at all.
Look, there's a lot of people out there that are saying that you can't be... A lot of parents don't want these sorts of conversations to be happening in schools, or they feel uncomfortable with it happening in schools. And then you have...
But that's the thing, is if you're uncomfortable with it happening in a school, then you have to do it. So what are you more uncomfortable about? Are you more uncomfortable about sitting down and having this conversation with your child yourself? Or are you uncomfortable that your kid's going to learn it in school and then come back to you with questions that you can't answer? And I think that's the other thing, is that parents need to realize that you don't have to be infallible as a parent. You don't have to possess godly knowledge. Your kid knowing that you don't know everything is good, because you can then sit and go like, you know what? I don't know that. Let's sit down and look at the computer together and find out. Because you've got that access. Like, my mum had to download the Encyclopedia Britannica onto the computer so that I could Google, or that I could look things up for school projects. Mm. And have Google.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Scott Morrison, her current PM, jumping on transgender issues in schools, about him coming out and talking about gender whispers happening around the classroom?
What they were saying is that there's an increase in transgender kids coming out, not that they're accessing treatments and stuff like that. If they're under the age of 18, they can only access puberty blockers. Puberty blockers are reversible. You stop taking them, you go through puberty. You go through the puberty that, you know...
They're not irreversible treatments.
It's not irreversible. My testosterone, my hormone replacement, is not technically irreversible. I can stop taking it, and while I might still have a bit of a hairy face and my voice won't get any higher, like, it'll stay deep, like, redistribution of fat that's happened and the muscle gain that I've had will probably reverse to some degree. There may even be a chance that I'll start menstruating again. You know, it's not irreversible. I could start taking estrogen and reverse the majority of it.
Do you think at any stage in your life that you'll ever question doing any of that?
Not particularly. I've never thought about... I think when I was, like, a teenager, I thought I would want kids, but I think if I really want kids, I'll adopt. Like, that's my big one. I have an adopted cat. That's my kid.
The thing that really bothers me is that whenever something in the media comes out about transgender people or with what happened with Safe Schools, incorrect information gets delivered to the wrong people.
Yeah.
And then
run away with it.
They go in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And then what they don't realize is that things are very different are actually happening.
I think what really needs to happen is that every single time a topic is brought up in the news, whether it is transgender issues or Safe Schools, or you need to bring in someone who knows it. You need to bring in an actual transgender person to sit down and talk about this stuff. When you need to bring in someone who works in Safe Schools, not someone who's like who runs Safe Schools, someone who works for Safe Schools. You need to bring in middle people, not people who are like high up on the list.
Yeah, exactly. I think that with this particular article, they were claiming that teachers at school are making uneducated assessments of kids who may be trans, and that has seen an unnecessary leap in irreversible medication, which was wrong.
Yeah.
And I think what an actual fact is happening was that there was this Dr. Elizabeth Riley who is working with schools to help teachers understand the terms
trans people use,
basically just having that there and showing that how they might be able to notice or help if a kid's being bullied.
Yeah. Well, there was a very good... It was actually a tweet that I saw going around about this, where people were like, oh, you know, trans people... You know, there's been an increase of 200% of trans children in schools. It's like, yes, there was also an increase of left-handed people in schools when you stopped beating them for writing with their left hand. So, yeah, if you make it... If you make the school... Or make school a safe space, then people feel safer and people are more open. It's not so much that there are more trans people out there, it's that they feel more comfortable being out and not hiding who they are. Like, I remember being in high school at one point, I think I was about 16 years old, and walking around Big W with my friend and crying to her and saying, I wish I was a boy and that I sometimes wore girly clothes rather than always... like being a girl who always dresses up like a boy. And that was like, that's bad terminology now, but like, that was the only terminology that I had back then. And I was really heartbroken by the fact that this was something that I thought I could never achieve. And I was like, I didn't feel comfortable being who I was at the stage.
If you could go back in time, mm-hmm. what do you think should have happened that was different mm-hmm. to make you a more well-adjusted boy going through school?
All I think that needs to happen is that kids need to be given words, because if they can't, if they don't have the words, they can't express themselves, and they can't. If you say that there is straight or gay, someone who is bisexual or asexual goes,
What am I?
There must be something wrong if I'm not one or the other. If you say there's male or female, someone who is genderqueer is like, okay, but what's wrong with me? Like, not giving kids those words makes them feel... I mean, the way I felt was broken. I felt broken. I was like, there's something damaged about me because I don't feel the same way that that people are telling me that I should feel. And it wasn't that they were saying that you have to be a girl who likes girly things, or you have to, you know, be a straight person who likes sex. They weren't saying that I had to be those things, but they weren't giving me any words to describe any other options. And that was what was hard for me. Like, and I said it, and I'll say it again, like, education is always the key. Trans, like, talking about the whole spectrum, go through queer and questioning, go through asexual, agender, go through intersex people. Like, I didn't know about, I knew there was an I. I did not know what the I stood for until maybe about two years ago.
Mm.
And I didn't actually know what intersex was either until I started educating myself. I was like, you know what? I really feel like I need to look this up. And so I went on Google and I went on YouTube and I, like, listened to intersex people talking about their experiences with being intersex. And that's the other thing, is that these kind of lessons, I feel like it's worth bringing in people who have experienced this and who can educate from not just an educator's perspective, but from a personal perspective as well. Because often people who are living it have the most up-to-date terminology as well. Mm. They've got the up-to-date terminology, and they can field those awkward questions that an educator who's not part of the community might not know how to field.
But up until it's age appropriate to actually introduce these topics of conversation at school, do you think there needs to be less labels and ways to describe men and women or sexuality? Like, I guess people are talking about, when is it age appropriate to be educating kids on LGBTI?
I think it's worth going over terminology in, like, just general terminology, that there are people out there who don't identify as cishet people, and that's a good, you know, let's go over some general terminology, and that should be introduced in probably, I would say, grade 5 or 6, because they're going into high school, and then in high school is where you should start to get more detailed about, like, what those things mean and talking. I think a lot of the, like, in grade 5 or 6, I would say it's more just about being like, these are the terms and these are what they mean. And that's okay. It's okay to be like that. Other than just having the terminology and a little bit of education about it, it doesn't need to be extensive education. You don't need to, like, go over sexual positions with them, or, you know, the intricacies of surgeries and what hormone replacement therapy does to your body and stuff like that. Just, you know, give them some information to work with, and then having, like, a counselor or something like that who is more educated and who can field more in-depth questions, or who has access to information for more in-depth questions, or who can refer kids to Headspace if they want more information that the counsellor can't provide.
Do you have a message for the Prime Minister who seems to be lacking in the right terminology?
Educate yourself, or find someone who can, because you're not only lacking in terminology, you are fueling a fire that is going to turn us into America.
Mm.
And that's going to be ugly. It's creating an unnecessary division in Australia. Like, Australia has its issues with divide, but we should be working harder to create more unity. Fueling this fire where there's people out there who are already scared and anxious, fueling their fire is going to create more division, and it's just going to make worse.
Before we finish up, I have to say, what is next for you? I could honestly say you could be an LGBT activist. I think that, you know, you've got a lot to say, and it's such a powerful story, your story, you know, not just transgender stories, but your story. You know, what is next for you?
I honestly don't know. I'm really kind of playing it by ear at the moment. I would love to get more involved with LGBT activism and stuff like that, and get more involved in that kind of thing. I knew going into this as someone, as a trans person playing a trans character, that there was going to be a little bit of focus on that kind of aspect of things, like, you know.
For sure.
Yeah, and I was like, I need to...
Are you okay with being a role model?
I'm kind of nervous and excited to be a role model because I do suffer from foot in mouth, and I'll say things that, like, while it doesn't upset me to have those questions asked or say those things and stuff like that, it might upset another person. And I think that's the thing I really want to stress with queer people as a whole, is that we're all different. Every single one of us is an individual, from, you know, someone like yourself who is a gay man, all the way through to someone who is an asexual transgender person or something like that. You know, there is a whole spectrum of us, and we're all different. And even if you speak to someone who is of the same, who identifies the same way as you do, they're going to have a completely different experience.
Have you got a message for the queer community that might be listening to this now?
You're awesome, and don't let anyone get you down, ever, because there's always going to be someone who wants to take a huge dump on you, and you can just give them the little finger and back out of the room.
And keep on smiling. Well, Roman, thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Word for Word.
It was awesome to be here. Thank you so much.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the Community Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.